Hey folks, it's Sunny. Just letting you know that you are listening on the iTunes feed, which means you're getting this episode for free, which means you are not signed up for the Patreon, which means you are missing out on the Squid Game episodes that we are doing, which are a lot of fun. We're doing some recaps of the show. We did the first episode in one episode, and we did 2 and 3. We're going to do episode 4 and 5 this week. It'll drop on Monday, with tape on Friday, drop on Monday. A little peek behind the curtains there. Those are only going to be on the Patreon ever. So go sign up over there. This episode that you're about to listen to is about The Many Saints in Newark, which, as you know, came out a couple of weeks ago. You're just behind on everything. You gotta catch up. You gotta catch up and sign up for the Patreon. Get everything in real time. Access to comments and community and all that, right? But just go sign up over there. You get Squid Game bonus episodes that will only ever be on Patreon. Patreon exclusives, as they say in the business. And we'll see you over there.
What do you want, Richard?
I'll be honest with you.
I want money.
I want to do a good deed.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Last and Sonny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. In fact, holidays are just around the corner. Perfect time to buy everything at the Subbeacon merchandise store for all of your family and friends and yourself. Treat yourself. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what is going on with you?
I don't have a lot in the tank to tell you. It's been an emotional roller coaster the last 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and eyeing some big life changes. And so I have just cracked open a Hardywood Peach Triple.
Wow.
And I'm going to let you guys tell me about your lives.
Is that a fruit drink? Is that like a, is that, no, what is it? It's a
Peach Triple. A Trappist ale.
Ah, with peach.
I don't know if it's actual peaches or peach pits. I don't know what it is, but it's delicious.
I don't know how beer works. Everything in a thing and it ferments.
It's too bad we're not doing something on 90210. I could have said, speaking of Peach Pit.
Oh, the Peach Pit.
Who is the actor who ran the act? They always had him. He was like the last name on the credit scene in the intro, who was the guy who ran the Peach Pit. Do you remember his name?
I don't, but he was 20 years older than everybody else, right?
Yes, he was. He was
like an adult. I mean,
Joe E. Tata.
Oh
yeah, nice.
Oofa.
Okay. Oh,
all right. So, how are you, boys?
Sonny. Yes. How are you? How are you, Sonny?
I'm fine. I'm fine. I went to see a new exhibit on Clint Eastwood, History of Clint Eastwood, at the AT&T headquarters in Dallas, which is an interesting kind of holdover from their, you know, AT&T still owns, I guess, Warner Brothers. So yes. Occasionally they do these, like, Warner Brothers exhibits at the AT&T headquarters.
Oh, that's interesting.
And they've got one up right now for Clint Eastwood, celebrating 50 years as a director.
Do they have him holding his old cock?
Yes.
I mean the rooster. I'm sorry. I meant the prop cock.
He's no chicken. Is it like Planet Hollywood with lots of props? Do they just have things on display cases?
Yeah, it is kind of like that. It's a little. I mean, first off, it's like tiny. It's very small. It's worth like going to check out. But you see the whole thing in like 3 minutes. But it was.
What did you see?
They've got Dirty Harry's gun.
Oh yeah,
Dirty Harry's gun.
Do they have the rascal that he used on the set of Gran Torino?
Terrible. He didn't need that.
He was younger then. He was like 78 then. He was still in his. Uh-huh. He's still fine.
Uh-huh. Very nice.
So I don't know, man. Getting around downtown Dallas is weird because I don't know it at all because I never go. I never go to downtown. I never drive into the actual heart of the city. So like just driving around there was like an adventure. I was like on the wrong side of the building, And apparently this happens a lot because I was just following, you know, the Google Maps. It happens so much that they have a guy, that AT&T has a security guard who is stationed there permanently on the street to be like, nope, you want to be on the other side. You want to be on the other side. Wow. It's the that other bad. Side of the building. So, it dead ends
yeah.
and it's the dumbest, thing in the world, but you have to like back up and then go down an alley and then go around. It's
might be cheaper for them to just get in touch with Google and have Google fix.
I would
fix
assume
the maps.
I would assume it's Google spiting them.
No.
My sense is like Dallas, when I was there, during a weekend, it's like Roslyn. There's nobody there. Like, they're only there during the day in downtown, like in downtown.
Yeah, I definitely.
Would you say
I don't know because I never go. I'd never
right.
go.
You wouldn't go
I'd
there
never
on
go.
A Saturday
well,
afternoon.
I would never go there on a yeah. on a yeah, on a, like, on a yeah. weekend uh-huh. Just to hang out. Mm-hmm. So hard for me to say for sure. But it definitely like. I feel like a lot of city cores are kind of like that. Certainly in Texas, I remember we went to, I can't remember if you, this was, I think, before your time, Vic, but Aaron Harrison got married in Houston.
Yes, I was not there. I didn't
that's where his lovely wife is from. And like downtown Houston on a weekend, because we were saying, you know, we were staying there on a Saturday mm-hmm. or whatever. Just like a ghost town.
Yeah.
Like we walked around a little bit and there's just like nobody there. It was crazy.
Well, this is true for new cities. It is not true for old. So yeah. Boston, Washington, Philadelphia, New York, mm-hmm. Chicago, San Francisco, the old cities have mm-hmm. real downtowns. It's these
right.
new places.
People live near where they work in the weird ways. Yeah, I mean, obviously yeah. in the city, you know, you're just one avenue over here or there. And the zoning is different, obviously, than in new cities, as JVL is mentioning. Yeah.
Yeah. Victorino, what are you going on? How's things?
Things are fine. So,
are you 100% recovered?
For now. You know, the lump is still there, but the pain is gone. And so I'm back to sort of running and it's... And back to normal. So I don't know when I'll lose that thing, but it's otherwise fine. It feels fine. I don't know what's there. I had a little bit of a flare. I had a tinge, and then it went away, and that was scary. And it's because I did have one beer, so I really need to stay away from beer and stick to the hard liquor.
You should only have martinis.
That's it. I have never had
health
a gout problem. Because of a martini, a gin martini, absolutely, that's right. So over the weekend, I was actually the sponsor for my nephew Robbie's confirmation. JVL, is it because?
Sorry,
when
you were
you
saying
think about
sponsor,
the sponsor,
and I immediately was thinking of a different sort of sponsorship, and I thought you. I don't think he'd be a very good sponsor for that sort of thing.
Well,
but for
any.
Confirmation, that's great.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you. Gifts of the Holy Spirit, Sonny. And it's, as I told him, just do the opposite of what I would do. For example, at the reception back at the house, there was a little girl who had a Happy Meal, and she had a bite out of her McNuggets, and then she just left the whole thing open.
You can't let it go to waste.
Yes, as you know, that's my principle. And you'd be surprised, by the way, of the shelf life of the McNugget. You know, because a number of things.
You said she had a bite out of her McNugget. You mean she had like one? She took a bite out of one McNugget and put it back?
Yes, and then the other five were untouched.
Gotcha.
So, in principle, I should be able to defend that and say, "Hey, I'm just going to have that because she's going to throw it away." But I actually felt sort of self-conscious that other guests were there, and they would see me take it, and they would think that's weird. Would you think that's weird?
No,
not among family,
the kind of family at a confirmation reception.
Yeah, she was a friend. I didn't know who she was.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Did you just pick it up and pretend like you were going to go throw it in the trash? And then when you got into the kitchen and you were
reached in
and grabbed them out?
You know what? That's my next time. That'll be my strategy next time. I actually tried to wait till people migrated to somewhere else, either in the house or in the deck, and I actually came back. And finally, like an hour or two later, when I was still sitting there, then I went to town. And the girl saw me, but she was small. And I was just like, what are you going to do about this? You can't I'm having your meal
now. All she cares is that you left her toy for her.
Yeah, that's right.
As long as you leave the toy, they don't care about the food.
Yes, and I forgot what the toy was, but it's something like, really? They still make them? And so I just had that.
Wait.
Yes.
I'm still trying to visualize this. So you're at a house.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're at your house?
My nephew's house. My brother-in-law built Dwyer's house.
So you're at another person's house, and a child leaves their food.
Yes.
And your stance on this is as soon as the child vacates the general proximity of the food, it's free game, that anyone can just go and eat it.
99% certain she was no longer interested.
How did you ascertain? Did you ask her if she was done?
It's a hunch based on my sort of food instincts.
I'm sorry. Has any child ever come back to a Happy Meal once they've abandoned it?
That's right. That's right. And there were cookies and stuff. So she left. And
yeah.
So, thank you, JVL.
I'm with you. You're safe on this.
So that's one thing on there. And then the second
thing. Yes. I'm still trying to. I still want to. So you. All right. So the food is sitting there for an hour and a half.
Yeah, about
2 hours. Mm-hmm. Let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And you at this point, you say, all right, now I'm going to go. Second question is, did you have anything to eat?
Yeah, there were other things like, you know, cheese and crackers and stuff.
Was there food for adults at this party?
Yeah, there was cheese and crackers and cookies. Until we later on had grill. We were doing hamburgers and hot dogs later, but I can't wait. I can't wait.
Sonny, you can't let it go to waste.
There was going to be an actual meal of food.
Oh, yes.
Grilled meats and the sorts later on.
Yes.
But you couldn't wait.
That's right. And I didn't want to see it be thrown away. And I couldn't wait. And I think really I was just really hungry. And I didn't care if the kids saw me. It was really the adults. And I waited for the adults, obviously the mother, because I don't know the mother at all. So
you can always just say that she's a liar. She's lying about you eating her food.
Exactly. If she dared,
you're the sponsor.
That's right.
You're the unimpeachable source.
Who's going to accuse a sponsor of doing something like that? Stealing? I asked Kate, and she said, no, it's easy. She said, go ahead. It's like stealing candy from a baby, she said to me. So anyway, that was that. In other news, do you guys have a garden in your backyard? You know we have a little garden of stuff. Do you do anything like that? You growing anything?
No, because it's not World War II, and I'm not trying to grow vegetables to support the troops.
Thank you.
We have a garden, a raised garden bed, which I made, which is boss.
Yes.
But we have given up on growing things in it because
animals.
We have
many
too.
Animals.
No, we just have too many other things to do with our time. Okay. Every day we're going to gymnastics or swimming or baseball or French class or Latin class. It's a never-ending cavalcade of things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, do we have time to spend an hour a day tending so that we could get one bowl full of lettuce at the end of the week? No. No, we do not.
Full of lettuce. No. But the only thing that's really survived our garden is the peppers. Animals seem to want to eat all the tomatoes, but the peppers
are ghost peppers.
I'm going to try that next time. So these were those super chilies, salsarific, and... But we're reaching that time now in the season where they're no longer green. They haven't turned red, and I don't think they're going to anymore. Like you just reached that. So I harvested them, and I cut them up, and I decided to add them to my prick dong. And I was curious about the green ones. I didn't think they'd be as spicy as the red ones. I literally just had the tip of one of them, and it blew me away. So the answer is anyone who's interested in this sort of thing. My question is if they know, would it eventually turn green, red on its own, even after I take them out? And the second thing is, even when they're green, those salsarifics are extremely spicy, as I found out when I ate it. And then, of course, the next morning.
Have you ever had prick dong at a cockfight?
No, I'm going to try that next time because, you know, it feels like the kind of thing that would just organically happen. But anyway... Okay.
All right, listen, if we're going to keep this episode under 3 hours,
yeah,
because we got to move along
because
people want to hear you talking about The Sopranos.
I did have a transition, but the moment is past. It had to do with the next morning in the bathroom. But anyway, speaking of carnage, over the weekend, Venom, Let There Be Carnage, took a huge bite out of the box office. I was going to say spun a web, but of course, this has nothing to do with Spider-Man, does it? The resemblance is coincidental. $90 million, followed by Adam's Family 2 with $17.3 million. And in third place, Shang-Chi still hanging on with $6.1 million. Box office thoughts. I have a question. Is Adam's Family 2, is this Adam's Family Values? Is this the one with MC Hammer doing the song?
Yes. It's a re-release. It's Raul Julia's second to last movie.
Farewell.
Before
yes.
Street Fighter killed him.
That's right. That's right.
Before Street Fighter murdered his soul and he gave up.
What a way to go out. $90 million. What do you think?
Marvel it's on the roll. Biggest. It's the biggest opening of the pandemic era. $90 million. It's funny. When the initial estimates came out and Sony was saying like $60 million. I was like, they're lowballing this. They're intentionally lowballing this because like. Every theater that I was going to, that I was looking at screenings for on the Thursday night it came out, was none of them were sold out, but they were all like 70% full, which is generally pretty full for a Thursday night showing. And the theater I saw it in was probably 50% full. I saw it at 9:30 or something like that at the Draft House, and. I was like, this movie might break 100 million. Like this 60 million number is bullshit. It's like obviously lowballing. They're trying to make it seem like a big win when it does much better. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, like the numbers as they were coming in through the weekend kept creeping up, 70 million, then 80 million, and finally 90 some million. Good numbers. This movie is in fact related to Spider-Man. There's a tag at the end of it. Spider-Man. On the screen, the Tom Holland Spider-Man, Venom's like, "Ooh, look at this guy! I want to be friends with him,
really,
or something." So
that's exciting. So
spoiler,
they finally
spoiler.
So that means that they finally were allowed to, is what that means.
I mean, who knows? I'm not. I can't speculate one way or the other about how Sony and Marvel and Disney are working all of this out. But the interesting thing here is that obviously Sony is trying to make their Spider-Verse a thing, which you'll remember. I went to see Venom, and there was a trailer for Morbius. Remember Morbius with Jared Leto? And in the trailer, Michael Keaton's Vulture shows up.
Oh, right.
He's like, "Hey, Dr. Morbius. What's up, Doc?" It's a funny joke because it's a reference
That's
to things.
A pretty good Michael Keaton voice.
And it's Michael Keaton, and he's like, "What's up, Doc?" And it's like, I was like, okay, well, they're trying to make this. It's all happening. It's all happening for for Sony. They're really. I mean, it is crazy. It is crazy that, like, that Venom is the thing that confirms Tom Hardy as a like actual movie star, as opposed to an actor who is respected and is sometimes in movies that gross a lot of money. Like it is, he is.
Yeah, it's not for the movie where he was the driver. You know,
it's not for Locke. It's not for The Drop or Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. You know, it's Venom. It's a dumb '90s grim and gritty suit Spider-Man.
Venom 2. Right
thing
question
that like the thing the worst we'll get one second the I contend again that the problem with these Venom movies is that Venom doesn't make any sense separated from Spider-Man. Like the only reason Venom makes sense as a character is because he's like pissed off about Spider-Man
That's
rejecting
right.
him, and like without that nothing that happens in this movie makes sense. I we're probably not going to talk. I'm sorry, what's your question?
Why does Venom have a white spider logo on his chest?
Great question. Nobody, no reason.
Because
why wouldn't he?
You could have Venom separate from Spider-Man. He would just be all black.
Yes.
It's a very simple fix to make. You just don't put the logo on his chest. But the choice to keep the logo while divorcing him from Spider-Man makes
and
no
the big,
sense.
And the big white spider
yeah.
eyes.
Yeah.
And like,
so,
no,
but
I mean,
the spider
no,
thing
no,
in the
sense.
Chest, you're right. That's very, very... strange. So in the first one that we saw, that was also there or no?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Come on. That's yep, come yep, yep. on now. So is this a sort of retcon because they're supposed to be the same age, right? But obviously Tom Holland's a kid compared to Tom Hardy.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter. None of that matters. Mm-hmm. Like you could have Eddie Brock be an older guy that, but like the whole point is that like Venom only exists because Peter Parker destroyed Eddie Brock's career,
yeah.
And Spider-Man rejected the symbiote, and then they come together, and it's like the perfect villain to go up against Spider-Man, because he negates all of his, you know, spider senses and stuff. But like, now there's just no reason for him to exist, except now he's like, I don't know. The weird thing, there are a bunch of weird things about this movie. I assume we're probably not going to review Venom on the show, because there's so much other stuff coming up.
I guess we went through such a dry spell where there was no movies, and now it's an embarrassment
of riches.
There's
like a million things. Coming out. Yeah. But like, this movie does a lot of really weird things. Like, for instance, Woody Harrelson plays Cletus Kasady, who becomes Carnage, right? And Woody Harrelson, I don't know how old Woody Harrelson is, but he's probably like 60, right? He's like mid-50s.
Yeah, if you see him in The Highwayman, he's old.
Mid-50s, maybe 60. I mean, he was in his 20s when Cheers was out, and that was 30 years ago.
That's right.
So
he played Nimitz.
So he's got to be almost 60, right? In this movie, which has a scene in 1995 that like sets the stage for everything, his character is like a 15-year-old boy. And like the 15-year-old Cletus Kasady, the teenaged Cletus Kasady, they dub Woody Harrelson's voice.
Oh no!
Over,
oh, come on!
And have him saying the kid's dialogue. No. It is frankly bizarre. Like and this movie is just filled with weird choices like that that suggest to me that someone somewhere freaked out about people not understanding what was happening in this movie. But whatever they did, I guess it doesn't really matter, because this sort of, I mean, when you gross $90 million opening weekend, that's a critic proof.
That's fine, yeah.
Fan friendly sort of thing. So big opening. I'll be curious to see if No Time to Die beats its opening weekend. I think it probably will.
Right, which comes out on Thursday.
It comes out yesterday. It came out yesterday.
Oh, yes,
because people
are
listening to this on
How
Friday.
About that
so
opening?
Yeah, it came out.
Wow.
Remember when it came out?
I do
and
remember
the Thursday
on
night
Thursday.
Numbers were yeah, I mean, it was crazy.
Just last
that
night.
They did that sort of numbers.
JVL, did you have any box office thoughts on
no.
this or no,
no?
You don't. Okay. No. Well, you know what?
Are theaters back, JVL? Are theaters safe? Are they gonna live forever now?
Yes, they will, because AMC will just start minting NFT tokens of their CEO walking around in his boxer shorts, and they will sell enough of these tokens that it doesn't matter whether or not anybody actually goes to the movies.
Lots of people are going to the movies, so look at these numbers. Box office numbers.
It's great. No, not great for Black Widow. Right. Mm-mm. See Venom doing 2x Black Widow, almost.
So they settled.
Well,
they
not
settled.
Quite 2x.
Black Widow did $80 million on its opening weekend, and this is doing $90 million. I mean, it's not.
How much
right?
more it would have done?
Black Widow did $80 million in its opening weekend, and Venom did $90 million in its opening weekend.
Is there a schedule for the streaming of Venom?
No, so in theory, this is a thing I read on the Hollywood blogs and the trades, as we say in the biz, that Sony has committed to a longer than 45-day theatrical window.
Wow, it's almost like they'll make more money that way.
Real.
So theaters will be it'll be in
real.
Theaters for a while.
Okay,
but it is weird though, because it is going to have a lot of competition. I mean, it's got No Time to Die. This weekend, it's got, you know, Dune in a couple weekends. You know, there's a lot of stuff in theaters coming up.
That's going to be big. Dune. You know what didn't do so well is the movie that came in fourth place. The Many Saints of Newark with $4.7 million.
The Many Saints of where?
Newark.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the prequel to The Sopranos that came out at the same time as on HBO Max. So not exactly the Skrull, if you know what I'm talking about. Oh,
I don't know what that means. I don't know what
Give
that
me the Skrull. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
Is Escarole the leafy vegetable?
Yeah, yes, and it's sort of like, you know.
Interesting. Green. There's a recipe that we make sometimes at my house that calls for Escarole. And then nobody ever has it. So you can
down
sub
in Dallas,
in,
they don't
sub
have
in
it.
Spinach. Well, they never had it in Alexandria either. It was not a. It was.
Yeah,
it was a rare,
you could,
relatively
you could
rare.
Get that up in Jersey.
Escarole. Escarole, yeah. Which is the green leafy vegetable. Yeah. That makes sense now.
Yeah, I mean, and if you don't have that, you can get broccoli rabe, you know, one or the other. Whenever I'm up in Tom's River, the ShopRite in Tom's River, there's a whole section, just the aisle just says Italian food. Anyway.
What's the difference between broccoli rabe and broccolini?
Oh, well, that's a good question, because they're both sort of long, thinner broccoli.
Are they the same
all part
thing?
Of the mustard family.
Is
bitter.
Baby broccoli the same as broccolini?
I always think broccolini and broccoli rabe, I think, are very similar. Bitter. They're both
also,
bitter.
It's broccoli
about
rabe, not broccoli rabe.
No,
rabe. Broccoli rabe.
Like you just rabe. Got robbed. Yeah, rabe. Okay, go for it.
The Many Saints of Newark. The prequel to The Sopranos, which has been kind of pitched to people as the story of young Tony Soprano. Look at young Tony Soprano. He's played by Michael Gandolfini. He's his father's son. He's young. But that's really only like a quarter of the movie is young Tony Soprano doing his thing. Really, this is the story of Dickie Moltisanti, who is, of course, the father of Christopher Moltisanti, who narrates this movie as a ghost from beyond the grave. He's telling his story. It's his Soprano story, and he's telling a story about his father and how his father and Tony Soprano kind of their fates intertwined or whatever. This is two movies in one. The first movie is a Sopranos nostalgia fest that is like, hey, look at young Silvio Dante. Hey, look at young Big Pussy. Hey, look at young Tony Soprano, look at young Uncle June, look at all these guys, look at young Livia, look at young Johnny Boy Soprano, you know, look at all these guys,
Carmella.
They're so young, we're doing... And some of that stuff works and some of it doesn't. The stuff that doesn't work is like the guy who's playing Silvio, which is like a SNL caliber acting job.
Inexplicable.
But I love John Bernthal as Johnny Boy, and I thought Vera Farmiga did a incredible job as Livia. Corey Stoll is close to being a parody as Uncle June.
Towards the
end.
It's very close.
But Michael Gandolfini's good, and you know, whatever. That is what it is. Yeah, and there are interesting Sopranos-y things here. We can talk about some of those a little bit later. But like, that's just keep in mind that basically it is nothing but a nostalgia fest. There's not an interesting storyline here at all. It is simply an excuse to say, hey, look at these guys. The second story is more interesting to me, and it's the story of Dickie Moltisanti and his relationship with his father and his father's brother, and set against a backdrop of race in Newark in America in 1967 or 68, whenever this is set, with the Vietnam War raging, et cetera, et cetera. This is more interesting to me, and it's doing a couple of different things. Again, I feel like this is the story David Chase really wanted to tell. David Chase wanted to tell a story about race in America in the 1960s, and this is the only way he could get to do it was by cramming an hour of Sopranos bullshit into it. So everything gets short shrift. He can't really spend a lot of time focusing on any of this. But Leslie Odom Jr., who is playing the black gangster Harold McBrayer, is really good.
I liked him.
And does a good job of showing the kind of frustration the black community had with the Italian gangsters and how. I don't know, unfair the crime syndicate was, I guess. I mean, it's like, it's, you know, whatever. It is what it is. I enjoyed that part much, much more. And I loved Ray Liotta's kind of dueling performances as Hollywood Dick Moltisanti, who is playing Dickie's father, and then Sally Moltisanti, who is much more interesting and is in prison. And our friend John Podhoretz texted me. He's like, he's clearly a figment of the imagination.
I was going to say question.
Of Dickie.
Because
and
of that
I,
weird
I,
like, scene at the could, end where he talks about could, being a volunteer.
Sure, you could make all sorts of arguments about this. I don't think he's... I mean, when David Chase does a dream sequence, he doesn't do it subtly. And this would be way too subtle for him to be a fake character who doesn't exist. But, you know, never mind. What's interesting, this is the last thing I'll say on this. What's interesting to me is that Sally Moltisanti is essentially playing a David Chase stand-in. He is the guy who looks askance at all of these people, who says, like, like when Dickie is trying to explain how, you know, he coaches the blind kids baseball team and all of the parents are like, you're such a saint for taking care of these kids. And he's like, kind of, this is an actual dream sequence where he's like kind of gauzily remembering all of these people praising him. And Sally just walks out, just leaves him at the table to wallow in his nonsense.
That's your explanation versus the pod theory, which is
that is right.
Sitting there alone all the time.
That is David Chase walking away from Dickie Moltisanti and saying, you know, this is fucking ridiculous. You're all bad people. You're all terrible people. So, I liked it. I could see why some folks might not. And I think it is also very clearly a backdoor pilot to a Harold McBrayer television show with some like Sopranos characters sprinkled in
from his perspective.
But we'll see what happens with that. David Chase apparently signed a first look deal with HBO and Warner Brothers like last week when the movie came out.
Is that right? Because he was also very unhappy, wasn't he, that he found out
pissed that this was coming out in theaters and on HBO Max at the same time.
That's right. It would have done, I think, marginally better, but I don't know how much more better.
I don't know.
Victorino.
JVL.
Was it your everything?
No, it wasn't, but we'll get to that in a second. I obviously have thoughts. For somebody, I would say this. My thought was, if you didn't watch the series and you were wondering what all the hype was that you watched this movie, you would be very disappointed if you think that the whole series was basically something like this and it's not. And so I do feel it does a disservice if it in no way sort of, you know, represents how good. And I still think of The Sopranos as my favorite series of all time. And so because of those expectations, I was rather let down. But what did you think of it as movie qua movie?
It's funny. I went in really wanting to hate this and to rag on it and to, like, you know, hey, look, it's Jake Lloyd. It's the Phantom Mafia, right? It's a prequel, which is showing you other cats. Look, there's Yoda, but now he's young, right? And I think important to say, so I am not, it's not like I don't know anything about The Sopranos. I am Sopranos adjacent. So I watched the first season of it. I know about as much about Sopranos as Sonny knows about watches from hearing you talk about it over the years, right? So in the way that you guys have picked up a little bit on watches, that's how I picked up on Sopranos. I didn't like it. I loved it.
Wow.
I thought it was great. I thought it was way better than the first season of The Sopranos. I thought that if The Sopranos was all this good, then I would like go back and watch it. You know, so Sonny, you said it's funny. You
season two is really good.
You said it was two things at one. I think it's four things actually. In addition to being the fan service and the soft pilot for the Aaron Burr series, it's a conversation with Chase having with his audience about being misunderstood by them.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's literally rebuking the people who loved The Sopranos. And that's what the Ray Liotta thing is. And then it's this Shakespearean tragedy about Dickie and Tony and about the idea that we are all products of our environment and there's no escaping that, except that we are also our own choices. And so the environment can't be your alibi. And it's really quite deep, I think. And it's, you know, it views murder as a crime against nature. I thought it was great.
Wow.
I loved it.
Wow.
Yeah. There, I'm sorry. Maybe this is a wrong opinion.
No.
I'm totally with you on... I wrote this. This is what I wrote in my review, that the dueling Ray Liottas are David Chase's two conceptions of how the show should be viewed. And like the vulgar, grotesque Ray Liotta who is, you know, throwing women downstairs and is like cursing in front of priests and like, oh, sorry, father, but not really. Like that's the bad fan. That is the right. You know, the fan mm-hmm. that David Chase hates and wants nothing to do with. And the Ray Liotta that's in prison and wants to listen to jazz and wants to spout his Buddhism You know, that is David Chase. That is David Chase looking at these people. And again, like the scene with Dickie talking about the blind baseball team is like the most, it's on the nose. I mean, there's a lot of really on the nose stuff in this, like when baby Christopher starts crying in Tony's arms and like the old crone is like, sometimes babies remember things from the other side. And it's like, God, Jesus Christ. It's the most obvious thing in the world.
See, I love Christopher Crane. You don't have to explain it to us. So that moment where she says that, I don't need. Yeah. Just the fact that, because I know I know that he kills Christopher. I mean, this is.
But no. I also think that this like over explaining is David Chase like really condescending to the like Sopranos fans.
Masses.
Like, I think.
Doesn't he need to?
I think he resents that this has to be a Sopranos movie, that the story that he is telling here has to be a Sopranos thing. And I do think that part of that.
Well, he's still mad that people were upset that Tony got whacked at the end, right? I mean, this is, he views the end of the Sopranos as the logical and moral endpoint for that story.
Well, maybe he got whacked. We don't know. Just
no, he said that. I think he said it to the New Republic. He said members only kills him.
No, well, no, that New Republic story was nonsense. But he, in an interview with Matt Zoller, he describes that scene as a death scene. Mm-hmm. Though earlier in the context of the conversation, he is saying you know, maybe he dies, maybe he doesn't. Mm-hmm. Whatever. It's complicated. It's intentionally ambiguous.
The whole thing about the two kinds of fans, I mean, it's interesting you should bring it up. It reminds me, JVL, many years ago of my interview with my good friend, Joey Pants. Joey Pants, who played, of course, Ralph Cifaretto from season 3 into 4, I think. And I had the good fortune of interviewing him the morning after the episode aired where he died. I don't know, that the timing was uncanny. And it was one of those interviews. I used an old tape recorder with the micro cassette. And ooh. I had to flip it over. So there was a part that was missing. But it was so, I could have listened to him forever. And the first part was just talking about his book, his memoir. But then he let me ask about The Sopranos. And then it was off to the races. But one of the things he talks about is about how so many people, you know, he says you have to earn something. He said something about you'll have to go back into the archives about how, you know, to be a true fan, you have to earn it, you know, and that there were so many people who don't, and that it's just, you know, and that it's much more than what people think in this whole thing. But I remember he said about earning it, you know, and has sort of the amount of work that gets put into viewing it, I guess. But that's interesting. First of all, the quadrants, these are pretty obvious. The plot I gave the plot a B. I wasn't sure if there really was quite a firm plot to this. I felt like it was going in a couple different directions, but I give it a B. Duration is a B+. It was 2 hours on the nose. 2 hours on the nose. Action violence is an A+. I would say that it was an A, and then it went up to A+ when that poor guy had the lug ripper in his mouth.
Oh, that was. I mean, couldn't watch that.
Slightly, I watched.
Teeth?
And, yes. And it was slightly derivative of like the head vice scene in Casino, but that's okay. It's a lug ripper. And sex, nudity, and A+. It's been so long.
When's the last time you saw a woman naked on screen having sex?
Lethal Weapon 2? Was it Lethal Weapon 2? I don't remember.
Lethal Weapon 2.
Showgirls.
Well, that's true.
It's been 35 years.
We watched the re-release. And so big points to the wonderfully Michela De Rossi, the very supple Michela De Rossi. She's just something else. Thank you. Supple. She's supple.
You know what? She's great in this.
She's great. Didn't you
Can I ask a question, though? I'll is her character the mistress or the wife?
Well, she is.
Is Dickie married to her?
She's Hollywood. She's Hollywood.
Hollywood's
she's
wife.
Married to Hollywood Dick.
Right.
Technically,
and
the
she
step.
Is the mistress.
Yeah.
She's the Gumar.
Yeah. Gumar slash stepsister.
But then why does Christopher have his name?
Not stepsister, but you know what I mean. Yeah.
So Christopher is the child of her and Dickie.
Yeah.
Not Dickie and Joanne. Is that who's, I don't know, who is Dickie's actual wife? Do we meet her?
Oh yeah, you do. Yeah. You see her, but you know.
But there's a line in the movie about how she can't have children.
That's right.
But it was not entirely clear to me as I was watching it, now that you mention it, JBL, I assume it was Joanne, because it would have been a bigger deal to, like, what are they gonna do? They're gonna like introduce, like, how would they?
Yeah, and she didn't look pregnant. There was no scene of her being pregnant, so you just assumed.
This movie also like skips through time, like pretty.
When she winds up in bed with Leslie Odom Jr., and they're like, wait a minute, how did they even, like, you know, she's sitting in the car when Dickie drives up to the gas station, and she and Leslie Odom Jr. look at each other, and the next thing you know, they're banging it out. Mm-hmm. Like, wait a minute, hold on, I feel like I missed.
But they also met before that, remember, at the Italian restaurant.
They were in the same room together. I wouldn't say that they met. Right. I mean, how would they find one another? They do not have the internet.
Doesn't Dickie tell her to like not stare at those people? They don't like it.
Sure, he does. But again, how did the, like, you know, like, he couldn't just like look her up on Facebook and friend her. Like, how did they? That just didn't make any sense to me.
Talking and suddenly they're
because in bed. Mobsters aren't allowed to be on Facebook.
So anyway, I know what you're saying, but that's usually how things escalate with me and my women. It usually is that quickly. Suddenly, it's there you are. Ray Liotta, by the way, best performance since Shantix.
No, he was great.
Is that too mean?
He was great.
The smoking commercial he did.
I don't know. Oh, Shantix. Remember that?
He got replaced by a turkey. But he's fantastic in it. And I worried about him in those Shantix commercials because he sounded very slurry. And then it was replaced by a CGI turkey. But no, he's fantastic. He looks well. And there's two different versions of him. There's one that's the heavier set. And then there's one that obviously looks a little bit thinner. No, I thought he was terrific. I liked this movie mostly until the end. And I felt like the fan service got to be a bit much. And the turning point for me was the later Silvio with the hairpiece. Suddenly he's moving around with the shoulders. I mean, that was silly because he was old, not because, you know, like when Silvio was young, I can't imagine that he moved around with the hunch, like walking around like Ed Sullivan.
Silvio Stephen Van Zandt,
like,
is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's no way. The other thing that surprises me is, I guess Tony is younger than Silvio, but I didn't think he was that much younger than him, where he's a little kid.
Yeah, doing the math on the ages of all these guys is very, you very quickly get into a situation where you're like, was Tony Soprano like 25?
Right.
In the first season?
Right.
Like, he's like 40 in the first season, right?
So I think it helps not to have seen the show then, because all of this stuff, which I knew was fan service, mm-hmm. it just washed right over me because I didn't give a crap about it.
Right.
And having no investment in being
references.
Part of the fan community mm-hmm. made it very easy to just let all that go as just what it was, like water washing over you.
Yeah. And it's weird. We're talking about three generations of Maltesantes getting killed either in or around a car, right?
Yeah.
Because he beats his father to death in it, and then of course he gets shot in the trunk, and then of course Christopher.
Who kills him? So Uncle Junior has ordered the hit, but who is it pulls the trigger?
Also, why? Because he laughed at him when he fell off.
Well, this is part of the reason the movie feels like two seasons of the show compressed into like 2 hours. Because that's like a 6-episode arc right there, where like insults piling up.
It does not need to be.
It does not need
to be a 6-episode arc. This is what I'm saying. This is why, like, who needs a whole fucking like 13 hours of this stuff? All the pathos, all the drama, all the symbology, all the things that you need from The Sopranos are right here in 2 hours, and you're done.
Okay.
Disagree.
Okay.
So who is that guy? In the show, Dickie is killed by a corrupt cop, right? That's like...
Yes,
the
it was unclear, and that's what they claimed, and I was never fully convinced that was the whole story, that this guy actually did it. And in fact, maybe they wanted Christopher to just do a hit and came up with the idea of, well, he'll definitely commit if we tell him that he had to do with his dad's murder. It was unclear to me.
Okay, so we weren't supposed... I just want to make sure that I wasn't supposed to know who that was calling Uncle Junior to say, yeah, it's done.
No, that's right. No,
okay.
no. No.
So, I thought that maybe this was somebody who was in his crew who was going to do the, because the same car drives past twice on the street while he's standing there talking to whoever he is. And so clearly somebody is circling the block waiting to do him.
Right.
Yeah.
The levels.
Did you guys watch this on TV?
I watched it on TV.
In the theater.
Phone.
I watched it with Kate.
My phone. It's on streaming, so it is just content, and so I treat
it... While you're Pelotoning?
I 100% watched it while I was Pelotoning.
Wow. I watched this on a TV with Kate, and the level of fame...
What did Kate think?
She thought it was okay, but again, she didn't like...
Wanted more nudity?
Yeah, you know how she is. The ending... Particularly the very end where the song, they cue up the song, the theme song of The Sopranos, and then they do the pinky promise.
I loved it.
No, I thought it was too much.
You didn't like that?
I did not like it.
A10 or whatever.
No, I was like, okay, this is too much. But there were so many levels of fan service, and I thought about it, in case you were wondering, that I picked up, and I'm sure there's a lot more. There's a bird reference, right, about, oh, he saw a bird, and the bird is an omen for bad luck. When Christopher in The Sopranos goes through his getting made ceremony where he becomes a made man, he looks in the window, and there's the bird, you know, and it's like this bad omen.
It's like a crow or a raven or something.
Yeah, that's right. Also, they like the sfogliatelle. You know, the sfogliatelle. People not from that part of Italy would pronounce it sfogliatella, and it's a pastry. And they make reference to it. And Moltisanti makes reference to this sfogliatella, but they would say sfogliatelle or sfogliatelle. And it looks like a lobster tail or a clam that's filled with sweet ragout. Sorry. So it's similar. It's a sweet cheese. It's a delightful pastry. But there it is again, the sfogliatella reference. Holston's, the diner. That's where Tony was
supposedly killed, right?
Yeah. And that's where he's hanging out. And so they're all hanging out at Holston's, which is not that close to Newark.
There's a really great shot in this movie where Tony, a younger Tony, is like standing outside of Holston's, and there's a crossfade. There's like a dissolve where Dickie Moltisanti is like standing in an alley, and it's like Dickie is superimposed on Tony. And then Christopher Moltisanti is like reading some narration or dialogue or whatever on top of that. And it just like, it's like the whole hinge point of Tony's existence is
isn't it? The stuff with Tony and the school psychologist, when she comes out to his mother and talks about how, you know, he remembered reading that book and all the little, that is such a nice job of both explaining, but then refusing to alibi him.
Sure.
It's really, the simple view of all these is to take one view or the other. Right. And this,
and she's messed
this does
up.
Both.
And she's messed. There's a, I did like how, you know, she, it's a brief moment of her trying to be nice, but that's just not in her nature.
She can't,
you know, she can't, Sonny, did you get that other two on the nose reference when they're talking about Tony wanting to play football, and then Uncle Junior says,
well, doesn't have the makings of a varsity athlete.
Right. Come on.
Or a professional athlete.
Right. And it's the same line that's literally repeated in the series. So it's really?
The most on the nose thing, I think, is when they set up the TV in the funeral parlor and then they kick it over and smash it up. They're like, don't you have any respect? Again, it's David Chase smashing up a TV, saying, fuck TV. I hate TV. he hates TV. He like has always said that he resents like the fact that he couldn't get movies made, that he had to make this Soprano show on HBO and like is forever associated with TV.
Because his later efforts, nothing else has panned out for him since then. Nope. What was that show about? It was rock music and Andrew Dice Clay was in it. See that? And that was on HBO.
Alessandro Nivola's great in this, isn't he?
You know what he would play? He could play like a biopic of Andrew Cuomo.
I have not seen him on screen since Face Off. This is the first... Nick Cage's brother. The little brother.
Castor and Pollux.
Castor and Pollux, that's right.
You're kidding.
I have not... This is the first time I've seen him since then.
So much
he's
better.
Great. He's absolutely
fantastic.
Great.
No. I thought he was good in that. I agree. And I do like Corey Stoll by and large.
I'm really surprised you guys aren't higher on this.
And I think JVL, it turns out that there's some benefit to not having not being a Sopranos aficionado, because then the little things aren't going to bug you the way it bugged me, particularly.
I liked it. I just thought it was trying to do too many different things at the same time. I just think it is trying to do too many things in too short a period of time, and as a result, it doesn't do any of them exceptionally well. It does some of them fairly well, but it doesn't do any of them exceptionally well.
I think it does all of them. Except for the fan service, which I can't, again, speak to.
Right. So that might have affected.
But the idea that, again, if Tony is the son that Dickie always wanted, and he tries to do right by Tony, but then this only actually pushes Tony away and drives him towards the light.
It's a bizarro Bronx tale, including the ending.
It's great. And then Dickie is this guy who is a bad guy who thinks he's the good guy. You know, because he kills his dad, which is righteous, and then.
But that is literally the entirety of the Sopranos. Well, is a bunch of guys who think that they're good guys and are actually monstrous assholes.
But here's the real question, though. You know, so he thinks he's a good guy, and when he kills his dad, that's a righteous thing. But the question is the act of murder there what then turns him evil, right, and turns him from being a guy who actually is a pretty good guy, who giving in even to righteous murder like that, justified murder, then becomes the type of man who also can kill his mistress.
But he's not. There's no reason to suggest that, or for us to believe that this is his first murder.
I'm saying it raises these questions because it treats murder really seriously.
It does treat murder really seriously, but this show has always done this. This is not like this is the whole crux of the show.
You could do it all in 2 hours. Then you don't have to do 7 seasons.
But you can't, though. Is the problem? You can't. It doesn't work. You need 13
I barely
hours
remember
to tell
the first.
Story
I barely remember. I remember a couple episodes from the first season. I really like the second season of Sopranos. If ever in the future, I mean, you're probably like me. I get people telling me to watch a million shows every day now. Like, oh, have you seen this? There's so many things to watch. I just can't get to them. Although I finally did, because we were going to talk about it in some future episode. I did start Squid Game. Holy fuck. Anyway.
We'll talk about that in the bonus episode. We're going to do a bonus episode on that, folks. Stick around. If you're a Patreon member, you're going to get it.
It's good.
But if you're not, you got to go sign up for
it. I got a question about Harold. Is that the character's name?
Harold McBrayer.
Oh, sure.
Does Chase view McBrayer as the same sort of monster he views Tony? Because he seems to be, again, like Tony, he's a man who's a product of his environment and his times, right? And so you see him getting radicalized by the Black Power movement, right? And going from a guy who is just happy to be a runner to then thinking, wait a minute, Whitey is taking all of this from us. But his view of justice is not to kick Whitey out of the Black community. It's to take Whitey's place as the oppressor of the Black community.
Right.
Which is fascinating. I couldn't quite tell if Chase was alibiing him for that or if Chase views him also as evil.
My sense of this is that, again, I really think of this movie as a backdoor pilot to a Harold McBrayer TV show. And that given
could be
time to actually get into Harold McBrayer and what he is doing, that you would end up seeing a very Tony-like arc where he is justifying increasingly terrible things to himself that are unjustifiable.
I mean, one of the things I find so, you know, infuriating, but in a very sort of a good way, because it's compelling in the series, is the accumulation of terrible things Tony Soprano has done, and wishing that if only his family knew exactly who's responsible for how many people's deaths, Jackie Jr., Christopher, I mean, it's endless. And Pod mentioned this as well, because, you know, we have the inclination to wanting to like these people. They're funny. There are funny moments with a lot of these characters. And then they do just unspeakable things because they're all psychopaths.
What did you guys think of Michael Gandolfini?
I thought he was good. I was worried about it.
It's very good.
I was worried.
I thought it was deeply unfair.
I was going
to
say unfair.
Cast him in this role, frankly. And I thought he did a good job with it.
I assume he's going to be acting in other things, but
a good job or a great job? because it is not clear to me that he can act, but he can sure as hell channel his father.
Yes.
In a way that was really interesting to watch on screen. Again, just a triumph, a total triumph. I loved everything about it.
He was there when his father died. He was there in the hotel room.
It's very strange.
Do you remember the last thing he ate was prawns? I love prawns.
Well, let that be a lesson to you.
Let that be a lesson.
I can't believe you guys aren't higher on this.
I know. I maybe it's because we love the
nudity,
show so much.
Graphic violence.
But a lot of I mean, it scores an A in the quadrants. There's no question about it. Especially the nudity.
The quadrants remain a lie.
No,
quadrants. This crushes all the quadrants, no. And yet Vic's like, B.
I can't help it. But
B minus.
It still gets an A. I average it out. It's an A. But me personally. I mean, I didn't read. I know the LA Times is a big thing and everyone's talking about it, like what they got wrong or something like that. But I mean, obviously other people feel this way.
So this is toxic fandom. If you come to a production like this and you are judging it by picking what it got wrong in continuity, you are literally no different than the Marvel nerds. And the DC nerds who sit around going, but the Sword of Grabthar is got a 4 gems and the hilt not 2.
Probably.
Right?
Sure.
I mean, it's...
Sure, sure. And I wouldn't know that because, again, those movies, I don't have the background that other people do.
Some people.
Some people, especially the DC stuff. I mean, it's crazy. I just like watching that like a movie. Okay. Wow.
It's great. People should go watch this thing.
Good.
It's an absolutely underappreciated gem.
Maybe I'll when it's on, I'll catch it again and see.
You don't have to wait for it to be on cable, Vic. It's already right there on HBO Max.
I just realized that and you can watch it. It's not the same. It's not the same as stumbling upon it. I don't know. It takes energy to actually turn it on. I don't know. Okay. Do we have any other thoughts moving right along? Fine. Spirit of the Week, corrections, shout outs. Do you have anything? I have a little thing, which is, yes, you have your beer. And the kind folks at Savona Communications, again, sent me this wonderful little flask of Kilbegan. It's a little flask. It's the kind that I keep in my pocket for things like confirmation and stuff like that. I'm just kidding. Kilbegan.
Or work.
Work. It's a what? It fits perfectly. It's an Irish whiskey. And they had it timed, unfortunately, a little late. For National Coffee Day, which was October 1, to make a wonderful Irish coffee, and you can use it with whipped cream. And they recommend also some brown sugar or brown sugar syrup, and you will have yourself a party. Okay, so thank you very much for the Kilbegan. And that is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sunny Bunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Victorino.
Yes, sir.
I have a very sensitive question for you.
Well,
so I wanted to save it for outtakes.
Okay.
Are some of the depictions in The Many Saints of Newark of, how do I phrase this, your people, are they
I didn't realize there were that many Filipinos in there. What? Offensive?
Are they offensive in the
no!
In particular, the scenes of domestic conflict between the men and their women? When Anthony's father comes home from jail and they have everybody gathered and the two of them just start screaming at each other and throwing stuff. And I don't want to say that this is a slur against the Italian-American population, but it sure seems a little over the top, no?
It is again. And
your people
of,
aren't like that, are
it's
they?
My people, and it's sort of compressed though, because you know, I mean, again, you're dealing with a movie, not a series, so it's like all very intense, and the fighting is happening all there at once. And you know, I think it made again. Unfortunately, it makes me think about the series. And by and large, they're you know they those people, meaning those specific subset of people, if you will, Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean that was very common in the series, except for Johnny Sack, who loved his very large wife. I found it amusing, and it's very specific because Olivia is just a really it's bizarre how that the two of them are together, because she's really messed up, but it happens again. And John Bernthal is fantastic. I was fine with that. I was fine. I'm sure it's fine.